From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for Memorial Day weekend 2021. The Brewers are in D.C. with the Nationals this weekend, but all of next week, they're back home with the Tigers and Diamondbacks. And your hot Milwaukee Bucks are looking for a series sweep in Miami this Saturday. Let's start with a story that should be a Florida story, but it's not. An alligator made a break for freedom, but after 2 days, he was caught and returned to Doc's Zoo in Bondiwell, Wisconsin. Come on, people, we're not Florida. And we have another animal story, this one from China. Four leopards escaped from a safari park. Three were rounded up within 2 days, but one roamed free for two more days. The Chinese government organized a search party that included 1,700 people and 900 drones. But sadly, that still wasn't enough for the 200 missing chickens. Here's a bizarre story. Guards at the Russia-Ukraine border confiscated a shipment of Chernobyl radioactive apples. So what do you do with these apples? Well, if it were me, I'd make radioactive vodka. You know, the kind of vodka you can find in the dark. Here's our classified ad of the week. Now hiring. Cemetery superintendent. The ideal candidate must be able to supervise in a fast-paced environment. And finally, let me apologize in advance for our headline of the week. Stolen prosthetic arm discovered in secondhand store. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Paige Radke, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Wow, Max, another wonderful open this week. Thank you very much for that. Well, much like your open, the markets had a great week as well, stringing together a bunch of positive days here over the last kind of finish to the week. The NASDAQ up 2.1% for the week. The S&P 500 up 1.2, closing today at 4204. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up still a robust 0.9%, although maybe not quite as stellar as the NASDAQ, closing at the bell at 34,530. For the year, the Dow now up 13.7%, the S&P 500 up 12.6%, the NASDAQ up 7%. That's a quick look at the week, a quick look at the year so far for markets. Obviously, it's been a great start to the year. Joel, we've got another newsletter coming out, maybe a good place to start. There's plenty of content, I think, from month to month. But in particular, you know, I think we're highlighting some of our activity in the community this month. We're highlighting some of the things that I think are going to be really important for clients as we look ahead. Anything in particular, you know, really jump out at you as we get that out a little bit later today?
I don't play favorites, Kyle.
Which one is your favorite child, Joel? Which one is your favorite child?
So, you point out a couple of items that we're noting and we're getting word out on. So the summer solstice soiree for it's a fundraiser for the Urban Ecology Center here in Milwaukee. Steve Giles from our staff has been on that board for 5 years now. And it's something that a lot of us have been active with. It's a great outfit that, introduces and engages urban dwellers to things that are natural. And that's pretty cool. And so that's June 18th. It's a big fundraiser, and we're Landis & Company is a sponsor of that. Landis & Company is a presenting sponsor for a July 15th Women of Distinction Awards. These awards have been going on since 1985, and it's to benefit the Women and Girls Fund of Waukesha County. And it's really, I was looking into some of the things that fund does, and it's really cool. It works with local nonprofits that are working to improve the lives of girls and women in the community.
And obviously our typical market-related and kind of investment-related pieces. In particular, I put one together, kind of a look at how uneven the recovery has been, how uneven we expect it to continue to be, at least for a while. And beyond that, I think a nice commentary on the benefits of Roth IRAs with some good, I think, comments in there from Art Rothschild, a nice tie-in with the last name there. But certainly, encourage all of our clients, all of our listeners to check out that newsletter. You can go right to our website and sign up for it if you haven't already. But should expect that probably by the time you can hear this podcast today.
Thanks, Kyle. And we also have a quiz in there so that people who regularly listen to the podcast or are just catching it maybe for the first time can test their knowledge.
And I always like to take that quiz just to make sure that I was paying attention when we were recording each week. So, so far so good, but maybe we'll get me this this week on something I say. You know, Dave, I think a lot of stuff that we can jump off with as far as kind of the markets. I think, you know, we continue to get news on what government spending is going to look like. Certainly, I continue to get news on what a infrastructure plan might look like. And when you compare what we're spending to exit this pandemic-led recession to previous recession spends, in particular spending in the Great Financial Crisis, we're talking significantly more in spending this time around. And I think important for investors to know that fact, because that money has to go somewhere. We've seen it help to boost stock prices, certainly. We've seen it help to stabilize markets, but we're going to continue to see pretty significant amounts of money making their way through the system. We've talked at length on this podcast about inflation, but I think there's plenty of other stuff to be aware of as we look at what government spending might look like over the next few years.
So Kyle, you hit it on the head. We are definitely in uncharted waters here with the amount of spending that we're seeing. And today we heard about a budget for going forward here for the U.S. government at $6 trillion. So it looks like the spending is going to continue. And I think your point about the comparison to the last stimulus that we saw after the Great Recession is worth noting. You know, back then we thought $800 billion was, you know, numbers that we hadn't ever talked about before. And now we're talking, we're approaching 10 times that. And, those are numbers are, for most people, are kind of hard to grasp, right? I mean, when you get into the trillions. But if you compare it to the size of our economy, you know, the GDP, the sum of all goods and services in the United States, is about $21 trillion. So now we're talking about a stimulus spending that rivals a third of our entire economy. So that's a tremendous amount of money. We've seen it, you know, as we monitor savings levels in the country, along with levels in money markets, in investment accounts, and there is tremendous cash reserves in the system right now. And I think the positive thing to that is that it does provide fuel for a growing economy. You know, as we came out of the Great Recession, there was a cash shortage. People had spent their money going into that. The people were underwater on their mortgages. There was not a lot of free cash flow to fuel that recovery. And I think that's why we saw such a slow, kind of arduous comeback from the Great Recession, is whereas now we have such significant cash reserves. You know, we're seeing it right now, obviously, with the economic activity at the pace that is likely to continue.
Paige, you know, the question that leads to, and the question that's on so many people's minds, is what that means for inflation. And I think so far what we have seen is less about the specific dollar amount that's being pumped into the system, and more about some factors maybe that are far more transitory than what most people are thinking. And so I know you've looked at kind of into the weeds a little bit on the CPI data that got released last week, and certainly seeing more inflation data in this week and the weeks ahead. But it maybe isn't quite as ominous as so many people might otherwise be pointing out.
Yeah. And Kyle, I think it's important to note too that inflation itself typically is not that big of a threat to the economy and the market, but that fear of inflation or those expectations of inflation, and then how that makes investors behave overall. So like you said, I did a little bit of a deeper dig into the core CPI numbers that came out the other week. And interestingly, the biggest contributors to that higher than expected inflation number was used cars and trucks, airline tickets, and hotels. So those are three things that coming out of the pandemic reduced recession that you would expect people to start spending money on. And so I think we're just at a point right now where the supply just hasn't caught up with that demand, but that's not to say that it won't ever. So I know you were talking a little bit about how the market right now is anticipating about a 2.5% increase in inflation over the next 5 years. But really, that's based off of the demand for treasury inflation protected securities. So we have to ask ourselves, is this something that we think is going to continue for the next 5 years at that 2.5% rate? Or is it just that fear of excess inflation that's driving people into these equities, which of course drives up the price and lowers the yield and contributes to that inflation expectation?
You know, I think that's key. And you said it early on, is that it's less about inflation. It's even less about the expectation. It's about how we react. And investors need to remember that we build these balanced portfolios with the idea that they can tolerate inflation running hotter than what we expect. Because we're not building something so precise that if we're surprised, it's going to completely disrupt the long-term plan. And so I think the challenge is there are some areas that come under increased scrutiny if inflation does run a little hotter than we expect, and we can certainly dive into that a bit in a second. But the thing to remember is that there are plenty of areas that are part of a plain old balanced portfolio that are going to benefit pretty significantly. And you look at things like certain areas of the real estate market, certainly not office REITs, right? Because if you're purchasing office space, you typically are doing that on a long-term contract. As the cost to those landlords go up and the payments they're receiving don't, they start to lose, you know, some of that income advantage they had over time. On the other hand, we mentioned hotels. You mentioned hotels, Paige. Hotels can reprice their rooms every night. And so what you want to do is find people in a market in which inflation is expected to rise. You want to find businesses with pricing power because they're the ones ultimately that can benefit from rising inflation, benefit from rising prices. The place you don't want to be is businesses that are stuck in long-term contracts for their prices, or businesses that are tied to interest rates. And so that's kind of the jumping off point, I think, Paige, for the next part of this. And I know it's something that's you've talked about quite a bit. You actually did a presentation for a seminar years ago talking about some of the opportunities that are out there in, you know, kind of the growth versus value side of the market. And for a long time, low interest rates supported growth stocks because you didn't have to discount future earnings all that much. And in simple terms, what we mean here is that when you buy a growth stock, you look at long-term what you expect it to earn, and you have to understand that a dollar down the road isn't worth as much as a dollar today, and so how much do you discount the value of that future dollar? When interest rates are low, not all that much, and you're willing to pay a lot more. But if interest rates have to rise as inflation rises, now you start to discount some of those growth stocks a little more. And so from just a pure valuation perspective, we see value stocks as an opportunity. But beyond that, you look at some of the cyclical names where, again, many of those are value. I think there's some opportunity there as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like you said, when we're looking at interest rates and the discount rate, growth stocks just inherently, because of those valuation metrics, are going to be more sensitive to rising interest rates. So I know we've talked about this back and forth for years, where good news is good news, or is good news bad news? And we're seeing this interesting dynamic in the market right now, where because growth stocks are so sensitive to the potential for rising interest rates, we're seeing a situation where good news is bad news for those growth names, but good news is still good news for those traditional value stocks. And so it's very interesting to watch that play out in the market. And like you said, combining that with the valuation component, you know, I think that if anybody gave up on value over the last 10 years, it might be time to start rethinking that.
You know, Dave, a lot of this depends upon where we are in the pandemic. And when you look at the fact that 50% of the adult population will have received both doses considered fully vaccinated either by later today or certainly shortly thereafter were close to 50% of the entire population. So 50% of the adult population fully vaccinated, close to 50% of the entire population with at least one dose in their arm now. And so plenty of light at the end of the tunnel here for the pandemic. And I think, you know, that's an important thing to remember, but there's plenty of other developments there as well.
Yeah, Kyle, we're looking at, you know, obviously cases are now the lowest at any point during the pandemic. You know, we obviously have some very good momentum going in the right direction for a change, you know, with the older population being receiving a significant portion of those vaccinations. I think you're seeing the death numbers really start to recede. We're starting to protect those people that are really the ones that are most susceptible to a bad outcome. You know, and then you enter the kids into the picture. You get you can stop some of the transmission. That's I think it's all good news, and we've certainly seen it. I mean, obviously, the last 2 weeks, what we've seen just in airlines and activity in restaurants and stores. I mean, just look at sporting events. You know, look what's going on with our local teams of the Bucks and the Brewers. Now going into June, we're looking at 100% capacity at those venues, and people don't appear at this point to be all that spooked about showing up, which is good news. You know, I think if you look big picture wise, there's still a few things to be concerned about, because you look at places like India, you know, some suspected things going on in China, although it's not widely reported there, of the virus kind of hanging around and really staying at some significant levels that are a little scary. And I think a lot of the experts are saying the longer the virus is allowed to perpetuate like that, then more opportunities for it to mutate and spread again. So right now we're looking really like we've done a great job here in the United States. Now we got to get the rest of the world on board, I think, to really get the global economy back to where it was.
Yeah, I think that's right, Dave. Joel, as we look at some of the economic indicators this week, you know, I think the hotly watched GDP number, certainly one that, you know, draws our attention, not all that different than what we had seen before, what we expected. But I think it's, you know, another reminder that the economy is on the right path again.
That's right, Kyle. It's also another illustration of how that the boost, the stimulus money has helped the economy recover so far. You look at the Great Recession, you know, it took us a couple of years after that recession to get the GDP back up where it was before. We're, you know, as of the first quarter of this year, we're within 0.04%, or it's $77 billion. But I mean, you know, that it's, so we're close. We're you know, we're getting there, and we're seeing further growth. So, you know, it's likely we'll get there soon.
And of course, home prices being a big piece of the overall picture right now, certainly. We have seen home prices just continue to skyrocket, and data from Case-Shiller this week, S&P Case-Shiller this week on that.
Yeah, so that actually looked at home prices. It has an index where it looks at 20 cities around the country, and it's been doing this for years and years. And that price increase year to year has accelerated every month except last May and June, every month since July of 2019. Then it was 2.1% increase. So that's basically the home price inflation rate, 2.1%. Then the latest month with that they have numbers from is March, and that was 13.2%. So that index is showing how much home prices are going up. And I don't think that's any surprise to anybody. We also had a report from the Commerce Department on housing, on new home sales. And I found it interesting in that 38% of the new houses that were sold in April, 38% of those weren't even begun construction yet. That's the highest rate that's been since 2005.
And I think as we talk about inflation expectations, as we talk about a reopening of the economy and kind of how people are feeling about getting back out there, we got three pretty important measures, a trio of consumer data in the form of confidence, sentiment, and then the all-important personal spending.
Yeah, the personal spending number includes a number that's kind of contained in the GDP report, except that this looks at it on a monthly basis. And that showed that the Fed's favorite gauge for inflation, which is called the Core Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, that's gone up in the last year. So from April 2020 to April 2021 by 3.1%. It hasn't been that high since 1991. So, you know, we're talking about inflation and how it's really shooting up right now. And I've got a chart that I included along with the show notes for the podcast at landis.com. And it shows that, you know, we've rarely been over that 2% target that the Fed has set for inflation. And all of a sudden now we're at 3.1%. But it just sort of looks like a spike there right now. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Also on that chart, though, it's interesting, over the 62 years that they've been charting these numbers, the average inflation rate is 3.2%. So this 3.1 looks really high, but not historically. And then, I'm sorry, you mentioned the consumer sentiment, consumer confidence surveys. Both of those are being held back by inflation fears. Consumers are saying, you know, we're afraid that prices are going up too much. However, that's got sort of a mixed effect on spending, because sometimes you want to buy something because you're afraid that the price is going to go up. So you want to get it right away. But other people, I talked to a guy today who's, you know, looking at buying a house, and he's just like, we're already there. It's too expensive. I'm just going to sit tight and save my money and hope there's some break later on.
Yeah, we talk about inflation as this virtuous or vicious cycle, however you look at it, this idea that the expectation for inflation fuels spending today, because if you wait, it's going to be more expensive down the road. And all that spending that takes place today ends up making prices higher. And so there's a lot of question about how you break that cycle. Certainly, there's a lot of questions about how much just the very expectation of inflation ultimately leads to it. And I think, you know, interesting seeing it in the consumer surveys that, you know, consumers are very aware of where things could head from here. And, you know, I think you see it with what investors are willing to pay for inflation protection. You see it with what, you know, those consumer surveys obviously are showing. And I think, you know, the one thing we need to be careful of is just that we don't put ourselves so far on one side of what the outcome might be there, that we're surprised if we miss. And so I think that's the takeaway for me, is that despite the fact that the expectation is that inflation ticks higher short term, and that long term we get back towards a more normal rate, you know, I think we can't get over our skis too far. You know, as tends to happen when you're downhill on those skis, you tend to fall flat on your face. You know, Dave, you'd mentioned a couple of public service announcements. I think, you know, a good time in the program maybe to remind clients and those listening who may not be clients of, you know, just a few things that might be important to be reviewing right now.
Yeah, Kyle, I just had a couple of experiences recently that weren't exactly positive, with people not staying up to date with their beneficiaries and their other estate planning documents. You know, these are things that none of us ever like to think about, right? Our own mortality, certainly, but so important to make sure that you're on top of that kind of thing, because, you know, the last thing you want is to have your estate, you know, not be distributed to those that you have intended it to go to. So make sure that you're paying attention to your beneficiaries and those estate planning documents, trusts, and so forth. And make sure that they're up to date. I think, you know, that's a pretty, you know, important thing at this point. And the other thing I'd bring up is that certainly in the news lately, we've had a lot of events with hacking and cyber attacks that have occurred to some large companies around the country. You know, it doesn't just happen to big companies. You know, most of those people were exposed via simple email attacks that happened to employees within those companies. So make sure that you are keeping, you know, due diligence and vigilant and a vigilant behavior as it relates to your emails. You know, make sure that you're not just opening everything, clicking on links, and unless you really know who it's from or if you've actually asked somebody to send you some information. But stay on top of that type of thing, because, boy, I can tell you what a headache it can be is if you do fall prey to that, and how difficult it is to unwind if you lose your identity or somebody gets into your financials and steals pertinent information. So that would be it for the day, is update those beneficiaries and you know, really stay awake as it relates to your cybersecurity.
Dave, I actually got a hold of my credit report this week, which those are free now for a while because of, you know, all the hacking that's been going on. And it's a good thing to do on a periodic basis. And what prompted it was I got a notice from my insurance company that they had somebody go into American Family Insurance, you know, big outfit. They said that, you know, somebody kind of broached their security and might've gotten some information, and people should protect themselves. So, but it's always good to go through that just to sort of see who's, you know, looking at your stuff sometimes, and sometimes you'll find things in there that shouldn't be.
You know, I think we do quite, and of course we have our two security experts here listening in as we record this today, but we do quite a bit of security training in-house, and it's incredibly helpful even for folks, I think, who are otherwise fairly technology savvy, to be reminded sometimes that, hey, maybe I should go change some passwords, maybe I should go add multi-factor or two-factor authentication to especially financial websites. But it can't hurt to always, you know, kind of review those things that might put you at risk, to make sure that, you know, you're not putting more information out there than you need to, that you're not clicking on links that you don't trust. And so, you know, Dave, I appreciate that reminder. Paige, you, I think, had a bit of a public service reminder of your own as we look at, you know, any number of headlines out there that are going to cause us to, you know, I think sometimes chase some bad ideas, maybe a reminder for clients on what just some of those headlines might actually mean for the long run.
Yeah, like you said, just be careful of falling prey to that headline risk. I feel like every so often I'll get the same question from five different clients where they all happen to read the same article, whether that be an opinion article, you know, so be careful of opinion articles, because that's just what they are. And so, you know, just be careful when you click on those stories, and remember that the goal of that headline is to get you to click on it. And they do that by, you know, inciting some sort of emotion, whether that be fear or anger or even happiness. So just remember when you're reading those, our portfolios are all constructed to withstand some level of volatility and keep you out of trouble. Chasing those headlines can hurt you in the long run. So really the best thing to do is not knee-jerk react to those. Stay the course, keep invested, because that's always going to keep you on the right path.
Great reminders as always. I think, you know, just a couple of closing thoughts here. Number one, we are starting, and Paige, your video that I can see here reminded me of it. We are starting to bring some of our staff back into the office fairly soon. We'll be ready to welcome vaccinated clients into our office as well. And so that's something to keep in mind in the weeks ahead, is that there will be some opportunities potentially to do that. We're still working out all the logistical details of that, and you'll hear more from your advisor when that's something that they're specifically ready for. But I do think it's worth mentioning, just as we talk about how the world is returning to some semblance of normal, that doesn't look any different for us. We're also going back to some of the ways we used to do things, and looking forward to getting back together in safe and appropriate ways. And then maybe one more reminder that, you know, we've got an important 3-day weekend here. Everybody make sure that you're celebrating responsibly and enjoy yourselves. But as always, we enjoy doing the program for you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.